I want to welcome you here this afternoon to the Second Court of Appeals. We have one more case to be argued. It's my understanding that the attorneys have checked in and they're ready. But before we begin, I want to introduce the panel. To my right is Justice Lee Gabriel, and to my left is Justice Wade Birdwell, and I'm Bonnie Sutter, the Chief Justice of the Court. Would the clerk please call the case?
The court will now call Baylor All Saints Medical Center, Brian Briscoe will argue for the appellant. Darren Wolf will argue for the appellate.
May it please the court. My name is Brian Briscoe, and I'm here on behalf of appellant Baylor All Saints Medical Center, DBA Baylor Scott & White All Saints Medical Center, Fort Worth, who I will call Baylor All Saints throughout. As you know, this is a Chapter 74 case, and the only issue before you is whether the trial court abused its discretion when it found that appellee's two Chapter 74 experts were qualified to opine on healthcare standards of care. So we're not here on the contents of the report. We're not here on qualifications as to causation. We're here only as to qualifications to opine on standards of care. The specific questions before the court today are straightforward. Is a non-healthcare provider qualified to provide opinions on healthcare standards of care in support of a Chapter 74 healthcare liability claim?
Is soup heating healthcare?
Is it healthcare? Yes, in the context of a hospital, when being served to a patient, it is a healthcare liability claim.
I know it's a healthcare liability claim under the law. I think that the Supreme Court's been pretty clear on that.
Yes.
The question is soup preparation healthcare? And so do you need the healthcare provider to give you that information, or can a dietitian or a food expert give that testimony?
Yes, Your Honor. The answer is it is healthcare when it's given in the provision of a patient in a hospital. And so the Chapter 74 requires in that context a report to be given by a healthcare provider. And so the issue today, and you're getting to the meat of the issue is a dietitian, simply because she is a dietitian, a healthcare provider? Because it's fairly clear from the statute and from the case law that you have to be a healthcare provider to provide a report. You'll recognize in appellee's brief that most of the cases cited by him we're talking about trial experts. We're talking about experts on specific things at trial, but this is a threshold Chapter 74 question, and what we need to determine and what we believe the court abuses discretion on is whether a dietitian who has no healthcare experience, training, education at all, is qualified to opine on the preparation of soup and the serving of soup and the prevention of burns in a hospital setting.
So how would it be different? I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
How would it be different?
That was my question.
When we're talking about temperature.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, maybe temperature would not be different. I understand your point. Maybe temperature, soup burns at a certain temperature, no matter if you're in a hospital or if you're not in the hospital. But the question is, would a dietitian or a food scientist who spent her whole career working for McDonald's and Yum Foods know when she walked into a hospital and had a patient laying on a bed, know what to do to prepare that food for them, know what temperature to prepare when reheated, know how to serve it to them, know what instructions to give them? And that's what this dietitian does not have qualifications to opine on.
So your position is that the standard of care with regard to reheating soup, okay, in a hospital setting is unique to the hospital setting, and that somehow you need either a nurse or a dietitian who works and is practicing in the hospital setting, or a physician who is practicing in the hospital setting with this type of patient to testify that you don't hand liquid that demonstrably can cause second and third degree burns on a patient to a patient in the hospital.
Well, it's not only my position, that's the statute's position, and that's case law's position. It says that in a Chapter 74 case, you have to have a healthcare provider who is qualified on healthcare standards of care provide the report.
Okay, are you familiar with Malone versus Hendrick Medical Center?
Not off the top of my head, but...
Okay, in that particular case, it's actually not a report case, so you're lucky in that particular instance.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's a summary judgment case. And the claim was a burn to the lower legs of a patient who was being treated for something with regard to the legs, and she was scalded by the water that was used. And the court held in that particular instance that did not require, that actually invoked res ipsa. It was not prohibited under Section 701 of the Medical Liability and Insurance Improvement Act. And in fact, that a lay witness could give testimony that controverted a physician's testimony about standard of care and causation under those circumstances.
And I don't know that case, and I apologize for not knowing that case. The initial reaction I have to it is, like you said, it's not a Chapter 74 case. We treat Chapter 74 reports different than trial.
Okay. So here's my question to you. You make a distinction in your briefing between Chapter 74 standards of evidence, okay,
yes,
with regard to the expert reports, and testifying standards of evidence, okay? So you acknowledge the possibility that, in fact, the expert report requirement here can require expert testimony concerning something that, if you get past the expert report testimony, would not require expert testimony when it actually goes to trial.
I'm not prepared to say that in this particular case that would be true, but I do understand your point, and it's taken well.
Well, but that's what you're saying. Broder's applies to testimony,
yes,
actual trial testimony,
yes,
but Chapter 74 have specific requirements, particularly with regard to causation, must be established by a physician.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
That's exactly right. And I would point you, I don't know if you've read Simmons v. Texoma, which is a El Paso case from 2010, and the issue in that case was restraints. So this was a patient that had restraints because he was combative or something, and the restraints, and Your Honor, that's his 329 Southwest 3rd 163. The patient ended up falling out of the bed, and so there was a question about, were the restraints properly put on? Was this patient properly restrained? And so the threshold Chapter 74 report came from a law enforcement instructor and a businessman who had, and I can quote, who, according to a CV, was engaged in the field of restraint and management of aggressive or unruly individuals. And the court looked at that and considered it and said that is not a report at all and didn't even give the 30-day extension. So it's very similar. That person maybe could have testified at trial about how restraints work and the mechanics of it and the physics of it, but that person is not a healthcare provider, so does not get to provide a Chapter 74 report. In fact, the court said it's not even enough to get you a 30-day extension, which we argued in this case is too, but we were given a 30-day, plaintiff was given a 30-day extension.
Okay. Would you agree with me that there are essentially two aspects to the claim being made here, at least with regard to the vicarious liability, and that is, one, that there is a standard of care involved with regard to understanding the nature of the patient in terms of the physical and the mental impairment of the patient, and whether or not that type of patient could be handed this type of hot liquid, that would be
yes,
one.
Your Honor.
And then the temperature of the liquid itself.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That kind of blows past. You wouldn't give anybody something that hot that would burn them in second or third degree.
Yes.
Okay. So there's okay. Why does Dr. Levine's report not match it? It appears that he says he's practicing. He's a practicing physician.
Yes, Your Honor.
He currently has privileges at Plaza Medical.
Yes, Your Honor.
And he specifically states that he does, in fact, see patients like this particular patient with mental impairment. And he specifically goes into and says, you do not give a patient with this type of mental impairment at this type of hot coffee in this type of manner under those circumstances. Okay, so why is he not qualified? And he specifically identifies the type of burn that he's clearly qualified to identify the burn given his background in plastic surgery. So why is his report inadequate under the circumstances?
His report is inadequate for at least four reasons. The first one and the main one is that he never says that he's familiar with the standard of care for nurses or for other hospital staff that were involved in the care of this case. And this court, following Baylor Medical Center at Waxahachie v. Wallace in Dallas in 2009, says basically you have to do the bare minimum. You have to at least say that I am familiar with the standard of care. In fact, I think there's some case law that says you get a 30-day extension, and the only thing you get with this 30, you need to do is to write in the report, I'm familiar with the standards of care.
Well, doesn't he say, I'm familiar with how to treat and have been involved in treating and caring for patients in an impaired condition in a hospital setting? And doesn't the case law say that you don't have to have magic words?
It does say you don't have to have magic words. That's primarily about causation. I can cite to you, again, this is this Baylor Medical Center, and yes, it does say that, Your Honor. It does say that. The Baylor Medical Center says when a physician fails to state in his expert report or affidavit that he has knowledge of the standard of care applicable to the specific types of healthcare providers involved in the claim, or that he has ever worked with or supervised the specific types of healthcare providers involved in the claim, the physician is not qualified on the issue of whether the healthcare provider departed from the accepted standards of care for healthcare providers. And that was cited by this court in an unpublished opinion in 2011, Columbia North Hills Hospital subsidiary v. Alvarez, for the same point.
And so doesn't he also say the standard of care requires that food or liquid served to patients be served at a temperature that's safe for human consumption, so it's not so hot that it endangers a person to whom it's served?
Yes, and again, we didn't object. We might have objected, but we're not on this appeal raising any issue with the substance of the report. So we don't deny, at least at this stage, that he stated a standard of care.
You're just saying because he's a plastic surgeon.
We're saying because he's
just doesn't meet the criteria.
We're saying that because he, I mean, I challenge.
Because he didn't specifically say he was familiar with either the nursing care.
Correct.
Or the food service standard of care under these circumstances.
That's right. In the petition, okay. All it says is hospital staff.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about a case that I don't remember the name of.
Okay.
But you can look it up because my name's on it.
Okay.
It's from this court, and it hoisted me on my petard at that particular time, and that is it involved a surgery where this court held that you can determine the knowledge of the individual, of the author of the expert report, by the substance of the report itself. In other words, by showing that this is how you would, it was basically tying off some particular organ in the body, I can't remember it. By tying it off, the court held that basically he demonstrated that he had done this type of surgery before, okay, and therefore he was qualified, because the objection I made is the exact objection you're making, which is that there was nothing in the report that said he had actually performed this particular surgical procedure ever before, and the court
didn't like that.
Didn't buy that.
Right.
Okay.
And I appreciate
that. And that's
that.
Essentially the argument you're making here, and so you're saying we cannot infer from the fact that he is specific about the substance of what's at stake here. We cannot infer his expertise.
You can definitely not infer it, but I would say it goes farther than that. So the case you're describing sounds like a doctor opining about a doctor. Is that correct? Or
in that particular instance, it was.
So if you look, and I'd be glad to provide the court with the cites, I think they're in our brief, every case where a doctor is opining on a hospital, so not doctor to doctor, but doctor to hospital, the doctor is required to state his familiarity with the standard of care for the hospital employees at question, and to provide, and really that's probably it, but we would also like to see why you're familiar.
So here comes the my cousin Vinny question, okay? Is somehow boiling or reheating soup, okay, in this particular instance by a nurse different than reheating soup by a dietitian or by a physician or by anybody else?
Well, I think the
laws of physics.
No, I understand the laws of physics and temperature and all of that, but I'm not qualified to testify as to how to take food and provide it to a patient in a hospital setting who's incapacitated or whatever's happening with this patient. A dietitian who's worked her whole life for McDonald's Corporation or Yum Foods is not qualified to say, at least in a Chapter 74 report, how that happens, and a plastic surgeon who's never said he's worked with nurses He's never supervised nurses. He's never trained nurses. He's never been with nurses in this setting. And he's not, and that he's not familiar, he doesn't say.
Are you familiar with any attending physician in any hospital who sees patients in a hospital setting who's never actually worked under those circumstances with nurses, particularly with regard to the orders for their patients?
Well, that's going to take some inferences, but I would argue in this case that a plastic surgeon is not a hospitalist. He's not an emergency room doc. He's a doctor that you're going to see, again, we're inferring here, but he's a doctor that you're going to see when you have an injury or you have a surgery. He's going to perform it, and he's going to come by and check afterwards. He's not going to be the one serving soup. He's not going to be the supervising the service of soup. That's going to be someone else in the hospital.
My guess is there's not a fellowship for food service for MDs. So.
Well, and again, we're not quibbling with causation. So we get it. He can give a causation opinion. We're quibbling with qualifications, and it's the law and the statute that provides these regulations, the kind of constrictions on who can provide these reports. I don't want to get off base too much, but again, the case law is clear, and I've provided a bunch to you in the briefing, but. Just as an example, I'll read you what a qualifying report from a doctor to a hospital sounds like. This is from San Antonio. The physician says, I have direct experience with treating patients with conditions like the condition involved in this claim. I routinely interact with nurses who treat patients with such conditions, and I've supervised nurses in an emergency room setting who care for patients with such conditions. And the court says, that's what you need. That's the kind of language you need. And if he had not put that in there, you can't infer that that is true simply because he's a physician.
Or he could have also put in there that, in fact, the standard of care is the same across the board with regard to this.
He could put
but
that.
But he didn't do that.
That's not in this report.
But that's not in this report.
He could put that.
Okay.
The interesting thing is what Appalee seems to stick on is a 47-year-old course or externship taken while this doctor was in medical school, and that is his only training or experience in burn prevention that is at least in the four corners of the report. And this is just another reason, we're sort of all over the place, but this is another reason why this is not a competent report and why the court abused its discretion. And I will say to the fact, and maybe I should have brought this up earlier, to the idea that this is one of these common subject matters that just because you're an MD, you should have some ability to understand. I cited you two cases, both from El Paso, both Tenet Hospital cases, Barajas and Love. One is about fall prevention. And it says that if the doctor doesn't say, I know about fall prevention, I know how to prevent patients from falling, I know about policies that deal with falling, I've worked with nurses to help deal with fall prevention. In that case, actually the report said he's evaluated patients who had fallen. He's interacted with hospital nursing staff on pre- and post-operative fall prevention of patients, which includes obese patients, which was part of the issue in that case. Then that's good enough, but if he had not said that, that's not good enough. So in my mind, fall prevention and burn prevention, which is what this case is about, are very similar. And then Tenet Hospitals for Love is about transferring patients. The idea there that just because you're a doctor, you don't automatically have the qualifications to opine on when a patient should be transferred or not. We might think, as lay people, that anybody should know that stuff, but the courts have said, no, you have to say in black and white why you know it and how you know it. So for all those reasons, Dr. Levine's report is not sufficient, and the trial court abused its discretion, unfortunately. Getting back to Dr. Hutt for a second, she is simply not a healthcare provider. She does not state she's a healthcare provider. She does not hold herself out as a healthcare provider. She is not familiar with standards of care for healthcare providers. And the judge actually sustained all our objections to that report the first time through and gave them a 30-day extension. And then he did not rule on the objections. Perhaps we should have asked him to, we asked him to, but he didn't in his order. And so it's, a reasonable inference would be that he knew that was not enough as well, that first report was deficient and needed help.
I note that you're out of time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I never even
saw it.
I apologize, Your Honor.
Your argument was so interesting, I didn't notice it either.
I apologize.
I don't know how long that light's been out, so would you add 5 minutes to the other side, please? and I'm sure yours will be equally interesting.
Thank you.
But I'm giving you the additional 5 minutes to compensate for it.
Thank you. May it please the court. We're required to show two things. Did these reports inform Baylor of their conduct? We have liquid that was not fit for human consumption. And we have a medical doctor that was trained during his residency at the Shriners Burn Hospital on the treatment, care, and prevention of burns. And I believe that's one of the preeminent burn hospitals in the nation. It's in his report. He has training specifically in that area. And he indicated that he is familiar. When we're talking about whether if causation or qualifications, he is specific in his report. He is familiar with the treatment and prevention of burns. His training and experience, University of Virginia, medical doctor, training at the Shriners Burn Institute, and he spent his career, he's right here in Fort Worth, treating people and fixing people that have been burned. Now, that part is after the burn.
Well, counsel, let me ask you this, okay? You're basically saying that just because he has made a general statement with regard to the prevention of burns, that makes him qualified. Now, most of the time that burns have occurred with regard to malpractice claims in the state of Texas back at the turn of the last century and earlier, it was because of x-rays, okay? So let's say the burn was an x-ray here, okay? He would still have to establish that he was familiar with the use of radiation using x-ray treatment with regard to those things and what the dosage would be and the duration and those types of things with regard to the burn. And a general statement about I know how to prevent burns, he would still have to be specific about how the burn occurred under these circumstances, would he not?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And he does that in his report, in that he talks about how he is familiar with temperature of liquid, and at a certain temperature it becomes dangerous and unfit for human consumption. Kind of like if he was talking about an x-ray specifically. He specifically talks about from serving and being in a hospital setting, having hospital privileges, and his training experience, how this hot liquid, and I think general knowledge, Your Honor, how liquid that hot is unsafe for human consumption. And he specifically addresses that, and he specifically addresses the condition of my client and how those two related to each other, her physical mental condition as well as
but you also are you also allege okay that there is an aspect of this claim that there should have been an understanding of her mental impairment and her physical impairment, and that she should have been approached with regard to food service based upon a nursing slash medical understanding of what her medical condition was in that regard. He doesn't actually do that here. He just kind of generally assumes that she's mentally impaired and that you don't hand somebody who's mentally impaired something that's that hot. But you're making, so what I asked him is you're making an overarching argument that no patient should be given something this hot regardless of what their mental competency is under the circumstances, but also you're making a distinction with regard to approaching this particular patient. Would that not require a nursing assessment of some kind with regard to deciding whether or not you can hand a mentally impaired patient a styrofoam cup full of hot soup?
And Your Honor, I believe we've got, I think there is absolutely two ways to look at it. I think, and Dr. Levine's report, I think, lays it out that it was too hot for human consumption, meaning it wouldn't have mattered if she is impaired or not. He went ahead and added on there that she was. He read her medical records, and he reviewed those in his report and listed her diagnosis and then how that would even also impair her. But at the end of the day, his report was that the liquid was too hot for human consumption, and it wouldn't have mattered who would have served it. I think going back to your original questioning earlier, and I have a case for this, if Your Honor would like to
sure
hear it, and I think it hits home to what you were asking earlier. When you're dealing with something of common knowledge of hot liquid that's unfit for human consumption. San Antonio Court of Appeals, 327 Southwest 3rd, 285, it's Jorgensen versus Texas Med Clinic. They were dealing with a flu shot in that case. And a flu shot, I'm going to say, is much more above the level of falling into an actual medical liability case than this boiling soup is. But they said, despite Texas Med Clinic assertion, there is but one standard of care in this case, the standard of care applicable to the proper administration of flu vaccine, whether it is administered by a doctor, a physician's assistant, a nurse practitioner, a nurse, or any other health care provider qualified to administer vaccines. It is self-evident that proper protocol for administration of a flu vaccine does not vary among health care providers.
And now, was that part of the actual report in question?
This case, they believe that it needed to be one particular person testifying as to the proper, who was the person to give the flu vaccine and who should have known how to do it. And the court here said giving someone a flu shot that's something that is across the board, whether it's a doctor, nurse, physician, assistant, anybody, it's the same. And I would argue that I hope it gets to the back to your question of would it have mattered who did it or what kind of shape was the person in, it would be the same, that it shouldn't have been served. In our case, serving boiling hot soup to someone in a styrofoam cup is going to be dangerous no matter who does it, and when it's unfit for human consumption.
Mr. Wolf, do you agree that Dr. Levine's report did not say that he was familiar with the standard of care applicable to the specific type of providers in this case? That language...
Your Honor, I think he said that he is familiar with the standards of care as they involve burns and preventing burns. And that was, and I believe, going back
of hospitals and nurses or of doctors?
I believe he said it was just general that the standard of care was to not serve a liquid at an unsafe or a temperature not fit for human consumption, whether it was done. I don't think he distinguished whether it was done by a nurse or in a hospital or not. He specifically talked about in this case, though, that it was done in a hospital with a patient that was impaired and that that was the cause of her injuries.
Okay, so if I were to ask you the question, do you have a case that says you don't have to make, you do not have to state in your affidavit what the standard of care for a particular provider that you've sued is, would you go back to the case that you were just talking about, or do you have another case?
Well, I don't have another case, but I think Dr. Levine did specifically say that the hospital breached the standard
of care.
Okay,
that's a breach. That's not standard of care. You've got to show standard of care, breach, and causation. So let's focus on standard of care. He didn't say that he was familiar with what a hospital's responsibility was in serving soup that's not too hot, or what a nurse's responsibility was in serving soup that was not too hot, did he?
I don't have that report right in front of me, but I believe he did say that the hospital breached the standard of care by serving soup that was unfit for human consumption. And then I would go back to, and I don't remember if he specifically named a nurse. I know he was familiar with the hospital setting because of his hospital privileges. And I would guide the court back to that case where the San Antonio Court of Appeals said on a type of injury this was and what it was caused by, it would be the same no matter who did it. And so I don't know if that would be a magic word or not that needed to be in there. But I know he talked about his familiarity with the hospital. He worked in a hospital setting, has hospital privileges, and knows about the prevention and treatment of these burns.
And your San Antonio case is a Chapter 74 case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
How do you get around, I'm sorry, refresh.
How do you get around the case, and I don't have the name in front of me, but you may be familiar with it. It's a Supreme Court case about the brown recluse. Remember the case in the nursing home setting where the brown recluse bit the patient? And the Supreme Court said, even though, you know, pest control is not a, generally a health care issue, that you still needed a medical provider to provide information about the standard of care of not having brown recluses loose in the facility where they can bite the patient. It seems to me that is probably the closest case to this one because it involves something that we're going to argue isn't really health care, but it's a health care liability claim nevertheless.
And I absolutely agree, Your Honor. And I'm not super familiar with that case, but I know a little bit. I know I'm familiar enough to I recognize when you say it. I think how it's different is in this case, you know, we do have an expert here to say there that what the standard of care is, that, that there is a standard of care that the, a liquid should be served fit for human consumption, number one, and as a general standard. And I don't think it matters who served it. It was done in a hospital, and that's the general standard there. And he did provide that standard. And then that it was breached by it was served at that state. And he added on that even in her state, it was even more dangerous. And so, and I don't know if in the brown recluse case they actually had an expert.
I don't think they did.
And so I think that's the biggest difference here is we have someone.
He gave it a try.
Yes. And so I think that's the biggest difference here. We have somebody that is very familiar and has training in burns and burn prevention, who's a medical doctor, and he's provided this report. And I believe it, we believe it meets the two things that we're required to meet and gets past any abuse of discretion that, that Judge Cosby may have had. And I'll go on. Oh.
No, you're still on green.
Okay, thank you. The we believe Dr. Levine's report stands on its own as far as laying out the standard of care, his qualifications, his knowledge and experience and training. We believe it meets the threshold of Chapter 74 as far as putting Baylor on notice and provides the basis that the claim has merit. We did, Dr. Hutt, she is a registered dietitian. Baylor All Saints has registered dietitians on their staff, and they rely on them to do things in the food service in their hospital. We don't have a magic word in there saying that she is a working in a hospital setting. We believe her qualifications allow her to opine on if whether it's dangerous or not to serve this soup. We absolutely agree she's not a medical doctor, and under Chapter 74 she's not allowed to opine on causation. But we thought this would be helpful in addition to Dr. Levine's report. We acknowledge that standalone Dr. Hutt would needs a medical degree to opine on causation.
But Judge Cosby's first order sustained all the objections, both standard of care, breach, and causation to this exact report, and then you just submitted the same exact report. So I understand you can stack them, but I don't know how does that, maybe that takes care of the causation, but how does that take care to the objectionability, if there's such a word, of the standard of care and the causation?
And Your
I mean,
Honor,
the breach.
Well, and Your Honor, that's why we got Dr. Levine, and I'm not trying to replace his report with Dr. Hutt's. I acknowledge that her report has deficiencies, and Judge Cosby recognized that. We're not hiding from that. I wanted it, you know, one of the things here, I think the overriding legislation here was to put the medical provider on notice of what they did wrong, and that's why we left that in there, and it wasn't to it wasn't for any other reason. And so we asked Dr. Levine here in Fort Worth, you know, about his qualifications and had him write the report, which we believe covers what Chapter 74 requires to get past the threshold.
And that was part of your amending process. So when Judge Cosby gave you an opportunity to amend the report, to bring it in compliance with the statute, you both resubmitted Dexter's report and submitted Dr. Levine's as an amendment.
Yes, Your Honor. Dr. Hutt's report, we resubmitted it, and we added Dr. Levine, who is the medical doctor here in Fort Worth.
I'm sorry, I said Dr. Dexter, but yes, Dr. the female Hutt, yes. So when he gave you the opportunity to amend, you amended twofold, one with resubmitting Dr. Hutt's report and then adding Dr. Levine's report.
Yes, Your Honor. And we did that because in this case we were somewhat not, this is very unusual, we burned by suit, kind of like the Brown Recluse case, and we really were having a hard time figuring out who to find to provide a report because it's very unique, and Chapter 74 now is so broad where everything fits in the hospital setting. So that was...
You're not contending that Chapter 74 expert report requirement doesn't apply because of the nature of the injury and the nature of what's here? Because I don't see that in your brief. You've clearly attempted to provide the expert report.
Your Honors, she was in the hospital. She was in bad shape, and they were serving her this liquid. They'd lost her teeth, and they were trying to give her this soup, so she was on a liquid diet. There's some health care elements in there.
Okay.
And so we're not hiding from that at all. We believe this is, you know, this does fall under Chapter 74.
Okay. If in fact we find that we agree with Judge Cosby that Dr. Hutt doesn't get you there, okay, and we agree with counsel that there's no specific statement in Dr. Levine's report that he is familiar with the standard of care applicable for food service in a hospital setting, whether provided by a nurse or by food service personnel for the nurse, okay? You've asked for us to remand for an additional 30-day extension, and you've cited one case to us. We actually have two cases, the Columbia case as well. We've actually done that. So the argument from opposing counsel is that there's nothing new about any of this, and we would only do that with regard to if there's something new that we're finding for the first time is defective. Given the fact that we would be finding Levine as defective for the first time, that's why you're invoking that. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think
we can't do it as to Hutt because clearly Hutt's been litigated fully.
I agree, Your Honor, and we asked for that because this issue when Judge Cosby gave the extension on Dr. Hutt, that causation issue, that's the new issue in Dr. Levine that he added. And so he wasn't before the court, and I guess they're also challenging whether he is qualified to actually give the report, which, you know, we believe with his knowledge and skill and experience, he's more than qualified. But I agree with you.
So if you were submitting, you said Levine one time and Levine, I don't know which one it is.
I'm sorry.
But if I'll go with Levine again.
Okay.
So if you're submitting Levine's report as a part of the amendment process to Hutt's report, then you've had your bite at that apple, haven't you? I mean, do you get another bite at it? Can you just keep adding different reports and get an opportunity to amend those? Seems to me that's got to come to an end at some point.
Your Honor, I know that there's some language in the Chapter 74. You get one opportunity to cure, mm-hmm. and we acknowledge that. But we also, I think, this court, as Justice Birdwell pointed out, you know, when there's a new expert report with some different issues in it that this court has found that they will allow that to be one more time to amend. And so we did put that in there in the event that the three of you find that this is a deficient report. And our argument is it's more than enough, and we hope that that's where we stand. But in the event that it's not, we would ask that the court exercise that. Allow us to do that again, or as you have a couple of other times. I don't think I have anything else. I thank the court and appreciate your time.
Thank you. Rebuttal?
Yes,
to the multiple extensions, Chief Justice, I think you've nailed it on the head. This could go on to infinity if we keep letting them get a new report with new issues and then keep coming back here or having the trial court give us 30 day after 30 day. Both the Texas legislature in Chapter 74 and the Supreme Court in Leland v. Brandel says that a claimant gets one extension, and it doesn't matter if it's found at the trial court or the Court of Appeals, but he should only get one. I understand you're saying there's some law from this court that might be different than that, and I'll have to look at Alvarez. The TTHR case went up on the Supreme Court, and it became mooted, the issue of whether or not they would get any extra extensions. But as far as I'm aware, the majority of the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court and the Texas legislature all seem to suggest you get one such extension, and if you don't fix it, the remedy is dismissal. I would
say the statute actually only contemplates that the trial court could grant the extension, but the Supreme Court found in Leland that the courts of appeals and the appellate courts could do it as well.
That's right. It added the Court of Appeals to the analysis. I would just ask, and I don't want to take time because I took time on accident. I apologize. I would just ask you all to read 74.402B, which is the statute that is applicable here. 74.351 says when we're talking about qualifications in a suit against a healthcare for standard of care, you look at 74.402B. It gives three specific requirements with an and between two and three. So all three have to be met. And there's some language that talks about what those are, but they're all healthcare things. And so Dr. Hutt is out because she's not a healthcare provider, and Dr. Levine is out because he doesn't meet two or three. He doesn't state or show he has any knowledge or familiarity with the standards of care as to Baylor Hospital or its nurses in this case. Unless there's any questions, that's all we have.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
I want to thank both of you. Their arguments were very helpful to us. We appreciate your being here today. Your case has been submitted, and we'll stand in recess, and you are free to go about your business.